Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to a slightly subdued version of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Penn Dubose of Sports Talk 790. We're slightly more subdued because after the great vibes of the last few days, Rockets going on a 3-2 road trip, including the big win at San Antonio to close it out, they came home and lost to those same Spurs 106-100 on Saturday night at Toyota Center. Now, a lot of it was just simply that they didn't shoot well. Rockets, when they were in San Antonio, they made a lot of threes. They were only below 32% on Saturday night, just 38% from the field. And when you're the Rockets, you know they're not going to be a dynamic defensive team. So it comes down to, can they score enough points? And they just did not do that on Saturday night. And James Harden had a triple-double, 25 points, 13 assists, 11 rebounds. But the big disappointment was Ryan Anderson, 6 points and 8 rebounds, but the real story was 1 of 13 from the field, including 1 of 7 from three. And he got his looks. Harden could have had 16 or 17 assists if Anderson had made even a couple of those looks. They just did not go down. And the story for the Rockets, it's pretty simple. I think early in the year, they are going as Ryan Anderson goes. These two wins this past week, when they won in Washington and they won in San Antonio, Anderson averaged 21.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, shot 54% from the field and 64% from three. And then you come home and he shoots 1 of 13 and 1 of 7 from three. So your variable, what's determining your performance for better or for worse, is Ryan Anderson. And it makes a lot of sense because James Harden continues to be an MVP candidate night after night. You know what you're getting from the likes of Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, although Gordon certainly had the best game of his Rockets career on Saturday night with 27 points, 10 of 16 shooting. Pat Beverly, when he returns soon, we'll get to that in just a few minutes. But Anderson's the variable. So far this year, when he has a good game, the Rockets have a good game. When he slumps, the Rockets slump. And I think there's a reason for that. And it comes down to when you have the front court that the Rockets have, main four players at this point in time are Ryan Anderson, Clint Capella, Nene, and Sam Decker. Capella is the only one who's even average defensively. The other three are substantially below average. Now, Decker's not necessarily a poor defender in general, but at the power forward spot, you're asking him to play against guys that are a lot bigger and stronger than him. So he's a little bit kind of artificially disadvantaged just based on the role that he's in. But to get back to the point, the Rockets up front, you know they are going to give up a decent amount of points and rebounds. They're just defensively limited. The hope is that whatever you give up on the defensive end, you are able to offset on the offensive end with how well they're able to shoot and score. And Wednesday in San Antonio, when Ryan Anderson scored 20 points and made a lot of big threes, including the one that ended up being the game winner in the final couple of minutes, he was able to offset what the Spurs did inside. Saturday night, when he went 1 of 13, he wasn't. And you know, he's going up against LaMarcus Aldridge, who had 16-10, Pau Gasol, who had 15 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. So you know against a weakened Rockets front court, these guys are going to be able to get their points, to get their rebounds. You just have to hope that you have the offense to offset it right now. And Saturday night, they simply did not, and that's why the Spurs won 106-100. Now, I know this is going to be a broken record, but this was yet another game in which you could have used Donatas Mataiunas. The reason is Monte Yunus is a much more all-around big. Yes, he's a good offensive player and that he gives you an option in the low post and he can shoot threes. But where Monte Yunus can really help you is that he is versatile and he offers you something defensively. If Ryan Anderson is having a clunker game when he can't seem to hit the broad side of a barn, then you can turn to Monte Yunus, and at the very least, he should be a capable defender on one end of the court. That's one problem the Rockets have. Now, hopefully this is, you know, the worst game of Ryan's season, because certainly 1 of 13, that should not repeat itself very often. But the thing with Ryan, when he's not making shots, he doesn't provide you too much value elsewhere. That's just the way his game is. So if you do have a game and Ryan's a clunker, it would help a lot to have Monte Yunus, because at least Monte Yunus, he's a lot more stable. His game, at the very least, he gives you a presence defensively that could hold his own against either Aldridge or Gasol, players like that. He just gives you a more versatile bench, more offerings, because you look at what the Rockets could throw up against the Spurs on Saturday night. Nene, obviously he has his limitations and he can only play the five. Sam Decker, he's a rookie and he's way too light to play against LaMarcus Aldridge. And Montrezl Harrell, he's not going to provide you anything more defensively than Ryan Anderson could. Maybe he provides you a tiny bit more finishing ability around the rim on offense, but the skill sets, you know, not that Harrell and Anderson are the same players, but they're not different enough to where you say if Anderson's having a clunker game as he did on Saturday, well, yeah, let's just go to Montrezl Harrell. No, but Monte Yunus, he's stable. He's a veteran. This is a game where you could have used him. And unfortunately, of course, we know where things are. Contract negotiations remain at a stalemate. We hope that by November 23rd, Mark Stein of ESPN said that that's somewhat of a deadline that the Rockets are working towards. We'll see some more activity. But Saturday night was a reminder of just why they could use him. But while Monte Yunus does not seem set to return imminently, one guy who does is Pat Beverley. Now, he didn't play Saturday night against the Spurs, but he did talk to us before the game. He said his knee was completely healed, and I believe it. His vibe was incredibly positive. He was jumping around the locker room. He is itching, raring to go. He says that it's completely healed, that he's going to be coming back this next week. Actually said he has a game in mind, but he was not going to tell us. I think the Rockets would like the competitive advantage. D'Antoni makes it seem like that it could be another 7 to 10 days, but certainly Pat is trying to make it come a little bit quicker. One thing that jumps out to me, you know, Wednesday the Rockets go to Oklahoma City. That's when the Rockets will play Pat's good buddy, Russell Westbrook. So I've been wondering in the back of my mind if maybe he would love to make his return against Westbrook and try to keep him in check, because besides just the personal history, Westbrook's the kind of matchup that the Rockets, without Pat Beverley, I don't know who stays in front of him, because James Harden, Eric Gordon, you don't want to ask them to do that. Corey Brewer, you could defensively, but he's hurting you a lot on the offensive end of the court right now. So just looking, reading between the lines, I know D'Antoni's saying 7 to 10 days, but if Pat Beverley says he's coming back sooner and he doesn't want to, you know, say exactly what he's targeting because they don't want to give something away, Wednesday the 16th in Oklahoma City would seem like a good candidate for his return. Other good thing that he told us is that he's not anticipating any minutes restriction. This isn't going to be a situation where he can't play in back-to-backs or that they're trying to cap him at 20 minutes a game. When he's back, they're going to turn him loose. So that's a great sign for the Rockets, who could clearly use him because, again, Eric Gordon played great off the bench Saturday night, 27 points, 10 of 16 shooting in 32 minutes. But because they put Gordon off the bench to try and stabilize those minutes without Harden on the floor, they felt like they had to put Corey Brewer into the starting lineup. And Corey Brewer is just not playing well at all right now. I'll talk a little bit more about Corey in just a few minutes. But for now, just a topical look. These two games against the Spurs in which he started, he is 0-8, 0-5 Wednesday night, 0-3 Saturday, played 14 minutes one game, 16 the other. So that's 15 minutes a night that Corey Brewer right now is giving you nothing. So even if you're able to move Eric Gordon to his natural role off the bench, well, now you're replacing his role in the starting lineup. And Corey Brewer, those 15 minutes, they're hurting you because he's not giving you even average level production. He's a net negative for you. So that's where Pat Beverley's return could help you a whole heck of a lot. Now, the other thing with this dynamic, I've had a lot of people asking me on Twitter, why not KJ McDaniels? Why are they starting Corey and not KJ? And I've said this before, and I actually talked to both D'Antoni and Corey before the game on Saturday. It all comes down to role. When you're yanking people around, Eric Gordon has played with Harden. He's now played off the bench. He's a veteran, but even the veterans acknowledge that it's tough. You have a very different mindset when you're trying to be a complementary piece in the starting lineup and when you are trying to freelance off the bench and provide some creative spark. And so this whole right now, if the Rockets were looking at a long-term absence for Pat Beverly, I think they'd be more open to experimenting with the likes of KJ McDaniels because he may be a better player than Corey Brewer. For the short term, what you're essentially trying to do is not yank people's roles around just for the sake of a game or two benefit. KJ McDaniels, now he's had a couple of slow games here, but by and large, he's played well off the bench this year for the Rockets. They want to leave him in that role. The same goes for Sam Decker. You don't want to disrupt them from their comfort zone, ask them to do something different this early in the year when we're only talking about basically a week's worth of action anyway. Corey Brewer as a veteran, also Eric Gordon before him, these are veterans that are a lot more secure in who they are. It's much easier to, you know, put them in the starting lineup for a couple of games, then pull them. It's easier to mix and match with those guys than the youth. So I think that's why you're seeing KJ not get the look. Now, speaking of Corey, I did talk to him before Saturday night's game, got a bit of an exclusive with him for a couple of minutes to talk about his move to the starting lineup, where he thinks things are going wrong for him right now, and a few other items as they relate to the Rockets right now, 5-4 on the season. So before we go any further, I want to play my Q&A with Corey. What's the difference in role like for you as a starter? Is there any different approach for you as opposed to what you used to do?
Yeah, it's more just more defensive minded, go out there and just, you know, guard the point guard, try to speed up the game offensively, just run, get out and get in the lane, try to make it faster.
Yep. I noticed there's a stat that you've played a lot better this year, your differential with James on the court. Now, obviously, James is going to make everybody look better, but how do you and James play well off each other?
I get so much easy stuff off James. Like, I just hadn't shot the ball well, but it's going to come. Like, I get so many easy shots, like, wide open shots, so just got to make them. You know, it's a big difference when you got three guys all watching him and get a lot of easy stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You kind of have an off game shooting, like on Wednesday. I assume that's a lot easier to take because it's like, you know you got your shots. It's just they rimmed out.
Yeah. It's not like I was taking bad shots. I make shots. And NBA is ups and downs, man. You got games where you make a lot of games where you miss. You got to have more games you make than miss.
Yep. So everybody's pretty excited to get Pat Bev back pretty soon?
Oh, yeah. We're going to be happy to get Pat back. You know, we have our whole team. So we're looking forward to that. But until he comes back in the next couple of games, we got to keep winning.
One last thing, Decker, your locker buddy here. God, he's had a heck of a year. Talk about what you're seeing from him, where his game is coming.
Oh, he's playing well. You know, he moved to the power forward position, so he's more comfortable. You know, he's able to outrun bigs, and he's faster than most scorers, and he's able to get a lot of easy stuff. And he can play. You know, he's shooting the ball like really well.
Thanks, Corey. First off, I do want to thank Corey for taking the time to chat with us. Now, obviously, I did not ask him specifically about why are you starting over KJ McDaniels, because I'm not trying to spark controversy in the locker room. What I asked him about was the role and him acknowledging how different it is to start versus come off the bench. I think that ties into what we were talking about earlier, which is that it's not easy for a young guy to get his first rotation minutes in the NBA. And so to ask him to take on a completely separate role than the one that he is finally starting to play well in the case of KJ McDaniels and also the case of Sam Decker, who Corey also credited towards the end of that interview, I think that's why you're seeing the Rockets turn to a veteran like Corey, even if he's not playing well right now. The other thing that we should acknowledge, as frustrating as it is to watch Corey play right now, this is not the same erratic Corey Brewer that we saw last year. His turnover rate has actually been cut in almost half. He averaged one turnover in 20 minutes last year. This year he's averaging, I think, 0.6 in 16. So he's cut that significantly. They're not struggling because Corey Brewer is being erratic and doing dumb things. They're struggling because Corey Brewer just can't make a shot right now. As he said, he's shooting 33% from the field, 12% from three. Now, Corey is not a great shooter. Nobody's asking him to do that, but he is a lot better than that, certainly. His field goal percentage should tick up to around 40. Three-point percentage, he's not great, but he should at least be in the upper 20s, 27, 28, 29%. That's what he's been his first 2 years in Houston, and that's enough to at least provide some value or enough to make defenders pay a little bit of respect for him and then let the other aspects of his game that he's better at, aka his defense, his transition play, show their value. Right now, he's shooting so poorly, he can't stay on the floor. And it's frustrating, and you know, all of us on Twitter have a good time at his expense, but he's out there, his effort has not waned, he's still giving you a net positive. on the defensive end of the court, and offensively, it's not that he's doing stupid things, he just can't buy a shot. Now, you can't throw him out there forever. At some point, if he continues to shoot that poorly, you're not going to be able to give him a spot in your rotation. But for now, this is why I think Mike D'Antoni trusts him, because he's not doing stupid things. He's just struggling at what should be the easy things. Well, it's not going to come easy for him. Certainly, he's not going to become Eric Gordon or Ryan Anderson from three. But, you know, you would like for him to at least hit a couple of those open shots. And if he does, he's going to be a lot more playable, at least on a temporary basis, which is all they're really asking for in this starting role, because Pat Beverly should come back next week. Another thing that Corey pointed out that I thought was really interesting, not just about his own role, but when he was talking about Sam Dekker, he pointed out that Dekker moving to the power forward spot actually helped his confidence a little bit. And I wondered about it, and then I thought it actually makes a little bit of sense, because Dekker at the power forward spot, he has so much of a quickness advantage and ability to take people off the dribble. He is able to get easier shots at the rim than if he were playing as a three against guys that are, you know, more well-suited to guard him. At the power forward spot, yes, he gives up some defensively, but offensively, he's able to get to the rim a lot more easily. And the biggest thing for young players trying to establish confidence, see the ball go through the net. So maybe that does play a role, and that's something that Mike D'Antoni talked about in training camp, that he saw Sam Dekker as a four in his system, and so far, so good. I don't know if it's the ideal long-term fit because of his defense and because hopefully the Rockets are going to get Donatas Smadiunas back, as we were just talking about. But in the short term, yes, I can see why they're doing it, and it's provided him, you know, a little bit of a boost as he gets his NBA career off to a very good start in these first couple of weeks. Last item I wanted to talk about before closing out this show, the Nene versus Clint Capela thing. I saw a couple of people asking me on Twitter, why are the Rockets so dedicated to playing Nene down the stretch? This was not a great game for him. While he played well on Wednesday, including the big-time defensive play to end out the game, Nene on Saturday night just 1-5 from the field, 4 points, 4 rebounds in his 23 minutes, -9 overall. And I know it's the easy answer. Capela played a lot better with 12 points and 10 rebounds. But until Clint Capela regularly makes free throws, I don't think Mike D'Antoni is going to trust him, especially against a coach like Greg Popovich that has shown a willingness to hack before. The Rockets have got to score a lot of points to win games, and the thought of fouling Clint Capela, what that's going to do to your points per possession when he's shooting like he is right now, it's just unplayable, especially if the game is close down the stretch. I know it's simple, but I think it's the truth. Until Clint proves he can make free throws more regularly, Nene is going to be the preferred option late in games. Now, the good thing, if you want the upside of this, Clint has actually gotten a little bit better. He shot 2 of 4 from the field, from the free throw line, on Wednesday. He shot 2 of 2 on Saturday night. So he's 4 of his last 6, 66%. Now, that's baby steps, but it's important. That in and of itself has raised his free throw percentage from 15% after the first 7 games to 31% now. So it is definitely a step in the right direction. I know they are working with him like crazy in practice, and they say that his form is good. He's got the right attitude. So he's had 2 games of decent production from the line. And if that continues, yes, he can get a shot late in games. But until it does, right now the Rockets have to look at the preponderance of the evidence, and right now he is a 31% free throw shooter, which means most of the time, if you hack him, you're going to end up with 0 points on that possession. You might end up with, 0.66. It's just not a good ratio for a Rockets team that has to score points to win. So for now, until Clint proves he can do it, that's why Nene is your option, for better or for worse. It was for better on Wednesday, for worse on Saturday. Hopefully that changes, but Clint's got to show his form at the free throw line for much more than a couple of games to earn that trust from Mike D'Antoni. It's frustrating, but I certainly get it. Anyway, I'm going to wrap up the show right here. Thanks, as always, to you guys for listening. Again, I'm Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets, and you can always email the show at lockedonrockets@gmail.com if you've got questions for me, or if you would like to inquire about becoming a sponsor of this rapidly growing podcast. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I also want to throw a tease on this NFL Sunday. to our sister podcast over at Locked On Texans. That's hosted by Robert Lynn. They give you the same kind of daily insight into the Houston Texans that we give you to the Houston Rockets. And Texans have a big game today, division matchup with the Jaguars. So if you want to hear the postgame, if you want to hear about what the Rockets are going to be doing over the next week to get ready for their big Monday night showdown next week against the Oakland Raiders, Robert Land has you covered at Locked On Texans. So wherever you subscribe to this podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, Google Play, just search for Locked On Texans, and Robert's going to have a lot of great content for you there as well. For now, I'm going to sign off. Again, thanks for listening, and we'll be back with you again tomorrow, Monday night, when the Rockets host the Philadelphia 76ers at Toyota Center. That should be a substantially easier matchup than these last two against the Spurs. So hopefully we'll have a bit happier show for you on Monday night. For now, have a great day. Talk to you then.